Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, for healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning to you. Happy Saturday. What a gorgeous day. This is why we're all here in Los Angeles, Southern California, for a moment like a morning like this. Palm Sunday's tomorrow. Next Sunday's Easter. I'll do a special Easter show, I strongly suspect. We have to celebrate our Lord and his resurrection. That has meaning in my world. In the world of science, resurrection means something. So does DNA. So does genetics. Today's show also has meaning, and it's very linked to genetics. It's very linked to DNA. It's very linked to resurrection. It's called cancer. Ironically, April 12th, which was yesterday, was my mother's 25th anniversary. That is the anniversary of her death. That's April 12th, 1994. She died of cancer. She died of metastatic breast cancer. That was April 12th, 1994, 25 years ago. I was just finishing chiropractic school. I was just studying radiology, looking at x-rays to determine what the lesions are. And one of the things you study when you study x-rays in chiropractic school is cancer. What does a bone look like when cancer has metastasized into the bone? What does it look like? The reason that's so important for a chiropractor is, suppose you have metastatic cancer in your bones and the chiropractor physically manipulates you, adjusts you, cracks your back, your neck, but the bone is lytic. It's been eaten away by cancer. That's obviously not what you want. That's a dangerous situation that can kill somebody. So chiropractors have to know, at least in theory, what cancer looks like on an x-ray. So I'm studying this, and of course, on July 6th of 1993, that's just a few months, right, before April 12th of 94. That was the year we had the great earthquake, January 17th of 94, 4:31 a.m. in Northridge, remember? Some of you remember. Others of you weren't born. Others of you were in other countries. But many of you remember that 93-94. It was a big year for me, for obvious reasons. At any rate, cancer had spread at an alarming rate all over her body to every single bone. And 9 months later, she was gone. She never had a fighting chance. And of course, to me, now looking back on it, my mom had passed away long before she had cancer. Long before she had cancer, she had all the markers of a progressive rapid degeneration in response to a life filled with too many disappointments that finally, well before she had cancer, kind of made her give up inside. It's a very characteristic chronology behind the advent of a terminal cancer. I'm not talking about a little skin cancer, basal cell squamous. I'm talking about the big stuff where you just leave. You're pinned to the mat and you're already tapping out. That happens long before it happens. And that's very important to understand with respect to how we treat cancer. When I have someone with cancer, when a person comes in to my office with cancer, I make sure they have a great oncologist. I never take it on by myself. I think it's wrong to do so. I think it's generally ineffective, so I never do. But I make sure that oncologist is a great oncologist. And if that oncologist is a boob, and many are boobs, just like in any field, it's not specific to oncology, I advise my client to seek a better doctor. Go to a better clinic. If you have cancer, go to the Rochester Mayo Clinic. Start there. It's an incredible place. An absolutely incredible place. The Rochester Mayo Clinic. And you may think that you're under good care because your doctor has great credentials and you're at UCLA or USC or UCSD. Don't think that. Go to the Rochester Mayo Clinic. They're way ahead. But that's really not the point of the show. Today's show is why we should not kill cancer. The name is Thomas Seyfried. S as in Sam, E-Y-F-R-I-E-D. And his point in his book, Cancer is a Metabolic Disease, is that going after it genetically is a big mistake. I'm actually dealing with this right now with someone who's under my care who made their choices and, you know, good luck to you. A lot of money spent on genetically engineering one's immune system. It's called immunotherapy. It's up and coming. It's going to limit, replace, augment, drastically modify what we call chemotherapy. There's still going to be chemotherapy, but the doses will come way down. And this thing about immunotherapy, cancer vaccines, this is up and coming. This is big. This is the future. Welcome to the era of genetics. We kind of thought it would be equals MC squared that dominated the last 120 years, but no, it'll be genetics. But you don't want me to get on that one, do you? I'm not going to go there. The attitude towards cancer is wrong. So today's show is why we shouldn't kill it. We shouldn't kill it. It's all people talk about. Kill the tumor, cut out the tumor, kill the cancer. Kill the cancer, deal with the side effects. What we should be saying is we made the cancer. It evolved out of us. A cancer cell is us. There's something about us within that produces the cancer. So you don't kill cancer, you appease cancer. You speak to that angry cell, that angry, deranged, unsupervised, militantly reproducing cell. And you ask it what's wrong. You ask it what you have done to anger it so much. You appease it. You neutralize it. You give it what it needs so it doesn't have to continue to blanket the organism with rage. Cancer's rage. Rage in the sense that the cell has transformed itself through its cell cycle into something that is you, but is a very, very irate, unsupervised, psychotic form of you. We could say it's the worst of you translated into your biology. And of course, if you look into the people who get terminal cancer, those people who just wake up, get a diagnosis, and they're gone. If you study them, they've been at war within themselves many years before. And I'm not talking just about the psycho-emotional realm. So don't turn this 30-minute show into that story. In other words, this is not about, yes, emotions are connected to cancer. This is about a cell has a replication cycle that's controlled so that when a cell reproduces, if it's supposed to reproduce, it reproduces the same kind of cell. This is about an environment which includes emotions that's in disarray, such that when that cell reproduces itself, it reproduces a grossly aborted form of itself. So let's just say, pick your favorite movie star, your favorite male or female movie star. You know, the George Clooney, Charlize Theron level. Or if you want to go back, the Cary Grant level, the Gary Cooper level. Pick your favorite movie star and pretend that they're reproducing themselves as a cell in exactly the form that the parent looked like. So Gary Cooper, or George Clooney, reproduces himself, and what you see is two Gary Coopers and two George Clooneys. That's what you call normal cell metabolism. The reproductive cycle looks like that picture. Cancer is when Gary Cooper or George Clooney reproduce themselves, and the reproduction looks like Frankenstein. It looks like the Elephant Man. It looks like Freaks. It looks like something really gnarly. Something frightening. And then that thing that looks like Frankenstein, it reproduces itself. Only its reproduction is much, much, much faster. The rate of reproduction has increased tremendously. So all these little monsters are growing. And then our mindset is that we should come in and kill that. So kill Frankenstein. You see? It's not working too good. Thomas Seyfried's book is trying to explain why it's not working too good. The same way Michael Duisberg was trying to explain why HIV does not cause AIDS, and that one of the biggest scams of the last medical century was telling everybody that it does. But that's another story. I don't need to get into the AIDS story. Someday I'll do a show on AIDS. Fascinating story. So cancer is a Frankenstein that multiplies like a guppy. You know, those little fish? Or E. coli, that microorganism that replicates every 20 minutes. The question becomes is, why has the organism created an environment to produce it as such? That's where we should be putting our energy. Now, where this is going to get very complicated, and I'm seeing it all the time now, is our newfound, and I do say newfound, insights into the genetics of cancer. In other words, how the intelligence of the cancer is reflected in its mutations. How a cancer cell shifts around nucleotide sequences to fool the immune system and thus becomes unmanageable. We have newfound insight into the process. And this newfound insight into the process is so good that we have fostered a multi-trillion dollar industry. That's the next 20 years. I guarantee you. As sure as we have a world, the next 20 years will be devoted to this. To playing a chess game with nucleotide sequences where the human organism, that be us, that be the scientists, that be the medical doctors, play genetic chess with what we call cancer. I would say cancer's like Bobby Fischer, and the humans are like a third grade moron. That's about how stacked the deck is against the humans. And that's Seyfried's point. It's my point, too. I have a person now who's spent about $100,000 on immunotherapy at the end of a long Mecca, a long journey. And at a very young age, is facing some very serious moments. And I mean lethally serious. And of course, everyone was all excited about this cancer vaccine and that cancer. It's at least the 10th time I've been through this in the last 4 years. Human beings are amazing. We are amazing. Science is astounding. When you study genetics and the rest of it, it's hard not to get conceited. It's difficult to be part of that and not get conceited. But then again, on the other hand, we represent nothing. We're meaningless. You can feel your humble moment when you're sick and in pain, when the earth shakes, when you get lifted up by a wave and thrown around in the ocean like you mean nothing. There's many examples that we all tend to shun or stay away from. But in stark contrast to experience that should keep us humble is the marvel of us. We as a species are marvelous. We do marvelous things. And when you study cancer and genetics, immunotherapy is very, very enticing. What of genetics? What of genetics are we not understanding? We're not understanding that gene regulation, meaning genes, are simply sequences of DNA which exist in the nucleus of the cell. And those sequences of DNA tell something called messenger RNA, that messenger RNA, in combination with transfer RNA and a ribosome, have to make proteins that align themselves with the template DNA. So DNA, RNA, ribosome, protein, all those protein chains, those amino acid chains, make your eyes blue, your eyes green, it makes you tall, it makes you short. All the variation of the DNA sequence accounts for the variation. We have 6 miles of nucleotide sequences in a single cell. 6 miles. They're all wound up in histones and rosettes and the rest of it. They're all wound up. And in the end, we only know what about less than half of these nucleotide sequences do. And then there's a lot of variation within that. And in the end, what makes a gorilla and a gorilla and what makes a person is about a variation that is so tiny in terms of sequence, it would blow you away. And now what we're doing is we're changing the tree of life. We're using genotypes, meaning nucleotide sequences, to figure out who was there first, what the branches of humanity are. And it's absolutely, it's give glory to God is what we should do. Because every time we ask a question, every time we learn something, there's another 50 things to learn. Every time we throw a party because we're so smart, new questions come that when they come, well, we seem much further away than ever before at understanding anything. And yet we forget that and plod on. The minute we can make a buck on it, the minute we can show some proof, some influence on the course of humanity, whether it's disease or whatever, the minute we can do that, there's an enormous amount of energy that goes into that, like immunotherapy. But maybe what we do in the advent of that, or corollary to that, is we stop analyzing the reality with clear blue eyes, with clear clarity, with precision, because we're so busy trying to turn it into an empire. And this is an example. The example is that for as much as we understand the genome, we don't understand most of it. And then for as much as we understand it, we don't consider that our DNA is 99.5% exactly like a monkey's DNA. And where the difference is, we don't know, we don't understand. In the end, we're going to meet God. DNA and what we're doing with DNA is going to take us to God. I guarantee you that. More than that, it's translated differently, translated into a more, if you will, scientific perspective, is eventually genetics is going to take us to biophysics. It's already integrated into biophysics. Maurice Wilkins was a biophysicist. Rosalind Frankel was a biophysicist. The other two, Watson and Crick, they were more purebred biochemists. They also, both of them, had a much lower consciousness. There's a lot of, I don't want to call it animosity, but, you know, Watson and Crick were respected, but they weren't. And it's not greed or jealousy. It's, well, Rosalind Frankel didn't get her due. And Maurice Wilkins, he was from New Zealand. Maurice Wilkins' dad, this is one of the three guys that got the Nobel Prize in, I don't know, 59 or 60 or 62, I can't remember the year. They got the Nobel Prize for the molecular structure, the double helical pinning on the DNA molecule. Maurice Wilkins was a biophysicist. So was Frankel. Eventually, we're going to go there because when you consider some glaringly interesting, curious, suspicious realities, like monkey DNA and human DNA are almost identical, and yet, look at the difference, and we have no idea why. No idea. That's where God lives. When man has no idea, God is talking. Now, if man wants to stay stuck on the notion that he does have an idea, well, God talks, but man doesn't listen. That's a problem. Oddly enough, ironically, satirically to some extent, that's what Seyfried is saying without saying it. I'm saying it. So my mother should have asked herself long before she had cancer why she was miserable, where she was miserable. You wouldn't have known she was miserable. She laughed like everybody else. She was beautiful. She seemed to be doing just fine, but she wasn't. And when the balance of trade tipped into the negative balance, whatever we call an unsupervised cell cycle overwhelmed her body. You see? Sloan Kettering, and of course my mother always went to the best of the best of the best, just like you. You go to the best. People always say to me, I have the best. You know? How would they know? How would they know the best? What's the best tamale you ever had? You know what? Generally, it's from some truck in the hood where a bunch of people from the Southland pull up and give you a tamale because it's great-grandma's recipe. Often that's the best. It's not the best at the most expensive restaurant, Spanish restaurant, in the world. That's the way it works. So how would you know, just because of your credentials and a Yelp review, that your doctor's the best? You don't know. You should start there. You have to use your senses, not your intellect. Intellect's okay, but you have to integrate it into your senses, and when in doubt, go with your gut. Then maybe you'll have some of the better. Very important to understand that. Why? Well, there's a million ways to go after cancer. Again, it ought to predicate itself on how to change the environment. As you change the environment, you will change the genes. So when your oncologist tells you you got skin cancer, you got liver cancer, you got brain cancer, you got whatever you got and you don't got much time, and it's because, well, now we can trace the line, and of course you got it from your grandmother's side or your grandfather's side, and that's what it is. It's a genetic transmission, and that's where it's left. That is mortal sin. I'll use the Catholic terminology, mortal sin. It is sinful to be told that in our genetic sophistication, we can tell you why you got the cancer because you inherited the gene. That is nonsense. You see, when someone tells you that, when your oncologist tells you that, tell your oncologist, tell me, if I didn't have the gene, would my cancer be 1 out of 20,000, 30,000, 100,000, 200,000? What would my statistic be if I didn't have the cancer gene? And then say, now that I do have this cancer gene, what is my new statistic? So, ladies, breast cancer, if you're BRCA1 positive, ask your doctor what the statistical difference is. You'll have interesting things happen if you do. It'll be like, well, you're 1 in 200,000 without the gene, but now that you have the gene, you're 1 in 150,000. Think about that. What does that really mean? The truth is, it means nothing. It means what they're leaving out are an innumerable number of factors that gave you the cancer that have nothing to do with that gene. Now, translated genetically, it means that gene that you have will not express until you make it express, until you dysregulate a bunch of genes around it, flip them on or off, pending what's more lethal. And when you've succeeded at doing that sequentially over years, as your dreams go up in smoke, as you begin to hate your life and perhaps the Lord himself, sooner or later, you will turn on enough genes, not the gene they're talking about, but enough genes to allow that cancer gene to express. That is what you should be told. That is what you have accomplished. And that is not just psycho-emotional. That is as chemical, as biomechanical, as structural as anything else. I hope you can understand that, truly. God bless you. Happy Palm Sunday tomorrow. I'll see you next week for Easter. Ta-ta.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.